Hello everyone, and welcome back to Daily Kaylee's 13 Days of Halloween. This is episode 2 of this year's series, and like I say every year, this is my favorite time of year. This is my favorite part of the Halloween season. I love getting to do this tradition every single year. Before I get into today's episode, I just want to give everyone a very obvious disclaimer that I am not Japanese. I do not speak Japanese. And this case involves a Japanese family. I don't want to offend anyone or seem insensitive if I am mispronouncing all of these words. So bear with me. I am trying my best. I have practiced saying these words, and I'm still very, very, very uncertain that this is correct. With that being said, today's episode is about the Setagaya family murder. This family, I don't even know where to begin, honestly. First of all, I would like to say that this case remains unsolved. This will be the 23rd year in December that this case has gone unsolved. It's not uncommon for me to talk about unsolved cases on this podcast, as you all know, but this is a very special case because there is so much information. There are so many clues. They have the killer's DNA, multiple types of DNA, and they have still been unable to find a single suspect, let alone the actual perpetrator, and that's insane to me. The Setagaya family murders refer to the Miyazawa family from Setagaya, Tokyo, Japan. Setagaya is in the western suburbs part of Tokyo. I have never been to Tokyo, but it is very common for larger cities to be broken down into neighborhoods this way. Like in LA, there's tons of neighborhoods like this. So if you've never been to Tokyo, or a larger city for that matter, this is just a more concentrated area rather than me just telling you that they are from Tokyo. These murders took place on the night of December 30th in the year 2000. The Miyazawa family was made up of Mikio Mikayo, like I said, I do not speak Japan. I'm going to call him Mikayo. Mikayo Miyazawa, his wife Yasuko, their daughter Nina, and their son Ray. Nina was 8 and Ray was 6. One of the more interesting parts of this case, well, more interesting, I'll say an interesting random piece of information. The killer actually entered the home through the second floor. The unidentified killer saw that a window on the second floor was open and climbed a tree and swung into the window. They also had to remove the screen in order to enter the house. This window was immediately adjacent to Sashigaya Park, which I'm assuming is a popular area in this neighborhood. So it was literally just by happenstance that this person probably, most likely, wandered out of the park and saw that this window was open. On the second floor was Ray's bedroom. When he entered the house, he immediately entered Ray's bedroom and used his bare hands to strangle him. Mikayo heard the disturbance in Ray's room, rushed upstairs, and discovered the killer. He fought the killer. He was able to injure him, but the killer ultimately stabbed him in the head with a sashimi knife. A police report later claimed that part of this knife broke off inside of Mikayo's head. And the killer then took the broken part of the knife handle and used it to stab Yasuko and Nina until the killer eventually found a Santoku knife also in the house and used this to ultimately murder them. After the murders, the killer remained inside of the house. Now, it is unclear how long the killer was in the house. It is anywhere between 2 to 10 hours. The police were able to break it down into this very wide time frame because of the family's computer. It was determined that all 4 family members were murdered between 11:51 p.m. on December 30th and 12:05 a.m. on December 31st. The family computer was logged on at 1:18 a.m. and then again around 10 a.m. While the killer was inside the house, not only did they use the family computer, like I said, they also drank 4 bottles of barley tea, ate a melon, and then ate 4 ice creams from their refrigerator. He then used their toilet and left behind his feces without flushing. He used first aid products from their medicine cabinet to treat his wounds and his injuries. He took a nap on a sofa in the 2nd floor living room. Multiple papers and documents were ransacked in the house. Drawers had been dumped out. Some were even dumped into the bathtub and the toilet. Some money was taken from the home, although more money was left behind. The killer also left behind 10 personal items at this house. He left behind a knife, a scarf, a small hip bag, a sweater, a jacket, hat, gloves, shoes, and 2 handkerchiefs. Like I said, the computer was logged onto twice. The first at 1:18 a.m. right after the murders. And the one around 10 a.m., that one is a bit unclear because this is around the time the bodies were discovered. It could have been the killer's last action before leaving the home. Or it could have been Yasuko's mother, Haruko, who actually entered the house and discovered the murders. Haruko had tried to call Yasuko multiple times. The call would not go through because the phone line had been unplugged, presumably by the killer. Haruko also visited the home, rang the doorbell numerous times, and no one answered. So she called the police. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, there are so many clues, and yet, after almost 23 years, we have no suspect. The police even examined the killer's feces that were left in the toilet, and they were able to determine that the killer had eaten string beans and sesame seeds the day before the murders. That is how specific it got. They were able to trace the clothes and the sashimi knife that were left behind to a specific store, and when they did this, they learned that the sweater that was left behind was 1 in 130 that were created and sold. Even though this is already a small number, the police were actually only able to track down 12 people who actually bought the sweaters. None of these fit the bill of the suspect. Inside the tiny hit bag that was left behind, they found sand. This sand was a mix of 2 very specific sands. One was determined to come from the Nevada desert, specifically near the area of the Edwards Air Force Base, which is in California. And the other sand in the bag was from a skate park in Japan. Along with the feces, they also found the killer's DNA all over the house. They had blood, they had fingerprints. I mean, there could not be any more clues left behind. None of this DNA is in their database. This person did not have a criminal record, and to this day, this DNA has not been entered into the system. They still don't have a criminal record. For physical aspects, the killer was believed to be around 170 centimeters tall and relatively thin. The police estimated that the killer was born between 1965 and 1985, So at the time of the crime, they would have been between the ages of 15 and 35. They determined this because of the amount of physical strength and physical build that would be required for entering the house on the second floor and committing the murders, fighting off Mikayo, everything. The wounds from the bodies indicate that the killer is most likely right-handed. All of these wounds were inflicted by the right hand. They examined the killer's blood, and it was determined to be type A. And this blood type was not any of the Miyazawa family. None of them have type A blood. While examining the blood, they were also able to determine that the killer is male and that he is possibly of a mixed race. He has European DNA from his mother and possibly a East Asian father. With all of this, they still had no leads. They even brought in Interpol just in case this killer is not Japanese or is not actually still in Japan or living in Japan. So many police officers have studied this case in the past almost 23 years. Almost 250,000 investigators have been on this case at one point in time, and we have collected over 12,000 pieces of evidence. There's nothing. As of December of 2021, there is still a $20 million reward for information leading to the arrest of this killer. As of 2019, there are still 35 officers specifically assigned to this case full-time. It is their full-time job to investigate these murders. There is still nothing. Because of this case, however, Japan removed their statute of limitations on crimes like this, specifically on murders, but in general, crimes like this. It's any crime, actually, that could bring on the death penalty. This was removed in 2010 because of this case and how bizarre it is. I wish I had more information to give you for today's episode, but honestly, the things that I have told you are so crazy, I think this will live in all of our heads for a very long time. Let me know what you guys thought of today's episode. I will see you tomorrow with episode 3. Bye, guys.